Hey podcaster, welcome to the Lockdown Show podcast with me, SCG. You're most likely listening to this on iTunes or Spotify, and thank you so much for checking this show out. And if you like this content, head over to YouTube and subscribe to my channel, The SCG Show, and look for the playlist, The Lockdown Show Podcast, to hear more. Okay, let's begin with today's special episode. Now, how I met my next guest, Gabrielle White, or Gabby White, as she likes to be referred to, is really interesting. I was scrolling through my Twitter, the SCG Show Twitter. Please follow us if you haven't already. And a picture of her came up saying 1.5 years sober. And it was trending and people were retweeting it and talking about her. And I thought, I got to talk to this girl. Because, you know, we just had Erin on, who spoke about drug addiction in one of our previous podcasts. And obviously I've spoken about addiction quite a great deal when my own problems with, you know, gambling addiction. And I thought, well, I've got to speak to Gabby. I've got to get in touch with her. So I got in touch with her. And here's the deal. She's 23. She's from Nashville, born a poet and full-time mom. Currently undergoing unemployment due to COVID-19. She's studying English. She fosters rescue dogs and volunteers her downtime. And ultimately, she seems just like one of these unsung heroes that nobody really talks about. So I'm going to be discussing with her current situation and hopefully getting right into the nitty-gritty of how she managed to conquer her demons and become sober. So it's my pleasure to welcome Gabby White to the Lockdown Show podcast, hosted by me, SCG. Let's begin with today's pod. Gabby White, welcome to my podcast.
Hello, hello. I'm excited to be here.
So please, likewise, it's great to have you. So Gabby, please, I ask all my guests this on the Lockdown Show podcast. Please tell me where you're from and how this pandemic has directly affected your life.
I am from and still currently reside in Nashville, Tennessee. And this pandemic has given me an array of emotions. As a few people may know or be aware of, Nashville actually was hit with a tornado, a pretty big tornado, about 2 weeks prior to the entire COVID pandemic. So we were already recovering from a major tragedy, and I think it just became extremely overwhelming for me and everyone else in this area to cope with. So it's been an adventure, definitely, to navigate through.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a series of very daft questions I'm going to ask you. Please describe what it's like to experience a tornado. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine the whole procedure. What's the whole experience like?
I was not directly affected. So when I woke up for work that morning and heard the news, it was just groundbreaking. I mean, it was extremely shocking. We had many, many, many homes and businesses ripped apart. There were some fatalities. And just trying to cope with the fact that a natural disaster ripped through, you know, your hometown and destroyed a lot of things. I think at first it was very shocking for me. And then I, you know, immediately wanted to jump in and find ways to help support my community. A lot of people here jumped the gun on community work, and we actually, when the public paraded to jump at the opportunity to volunteer, we had an overabundant amount of volunteers willing to help neighbors and business owners alike. So we actually were they had to put out a plan on how to navigate all of the volunteers that showed up to immediately start working on the city. And that was very, very, very humbling to know that my hometown and where I'm from, and just being in this environment that no matter what, nothing can break down our perseverance and our support for one another here.
I reckon that prepared you for the pandemic.
It was kind of like I personally emotionally like bared down and was like, I don't know what the next few months are going to look like now, but I guess I'm gonna have to start shifting things around mentally and preparing for what's to come and kind of preparing for the unexpected, if that's even possible.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine how to. And that's both in 2020, right? The tornado was earlier this year.
Correct,
Oh
correct.
my God. So t tell me, in the introduction, I explained you're a mother, you foster dogs, you're a very creative person with poetry and stuff, but how virus and pandemic actually affected you on a personal level?
So in the beginning, I w had lost my job, and I was kind of, I had one foot out the door already, and I was not sure how the transition was going to go for me because I was in love with my job, but I was in the middle of a career shift and still am. And with that, I had lost my job because it just was inevitable with some of the businesses shutting down. And I was helping manage a small business, and that was probably one of the better decisions we all agreed on with letting me go. But the transition of kind of locking down and staying at home was really, really hard. My son started to really miss socializing, so I had to, basically get down to his level and pretty much reinvent what we're going to do day to day for him. And I wasn't really too, I guess, too limited with socializing because I have a lot of friends out of state that I virtually talk with. But it was pretty hard to experience going from working around the clock, physically being outside. I go for runs to help with my mental health and anxiety management. And when the state parks shut down, I was no longer able to have an exercise plan. So there were some really, really hard days trying to manage my anxiety and just keep an optimistic spirit without having those tools. That was probably the biggest factor that I ran into to try to make my life feel a little bit normal throughout it all.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job, and I'm so sorry your way. I've got a few questions. What was your job before that you lost?
So I actually was managing a dog kennel, a dog boarding facility daycare, but we were implementing a plan to kind of re-establish the pet care industry in Nashville and just worldwide, so, or I guess global. And it was one of the best jobs I've ever had.
I could tell. I could tell. I could tell it was. Yeah.
So, I was living the dream just about with my
Oh,
job.
bless you. Bless you.
I would wake up and get excited to go to work. So that was pretty hard for me to not be able to do that anymore.
That must be awful. And
I'm sorry, I think you cut.
can you hear me? Can you hear me?
I can now, yes.
I don't know what happened there. How old is your son?
My son is 4.
Okay, so really young, really young. Oh my God. Yeah. So the parks were closed. So obviously, different people around the world are experiencing different restrictions and laws. What are the laws and restrictions of your town and state?
So I actually cannot speak for the entire state as far as like East Tennessee, of that sort. I can speak for the, Middle Tennessee area. We went through a stay-at-home order, and they pretty much shut everything down except for what they consider essential businesses. So grocery stores, I believe pharmacies were included in that, doctor's offices, things of that array. And we are actually currently in phase two of reopening, where they're starting to open up different places like gyms and nail salons and sports venues and bars and restaurants at lower capacities. So people are now able to go out and about currently. They're not mandating masks on every level, but they are in some places. So we were shut, I believe we were shut down completely besides the essentials for about a month. So
And how do you feel the US, without getting into too much political drama here, because we don't need to, how do you think the US is, yeah, what's the point, right? How do you think America have come across, and how do you think it's been handled well or poorly?
I think the one thing that I've really taken notice to, that has, I don't really see enough people talking about it, but it's kind of been interesting to see how people deal with the pandemic on a psychological level. And so I see a lot of guilt and shame being projected around. I personally wear masks. I personally avoid people. Being outside was my number one way to cope. And thankfully, I have a front yard to even and a backyard to even go and enjoy my time with my family, my dogs and my son. But it's been very interesting. I don't really know if I can say there's a right or wrong way. I mean, there's a, people have their own set of morals that they can follow and what they think is right and wrong. I think that what I've noticed, if anything, was as far as on a psychological level, the people that innately harbor shame and guilt within themselves seem to have projected that more during the pandemic on how to follow health guidelines. So say somebody, is very, very prone to self-guilt on how to follow the rules of whatever being a human, so to speak. They, I've noticed, will project or speak out on how to follow the rules in a pandemic. If that makes sense to you.
Would you argue that people have been more successful in the pandemic than politicians and governments?
The people.
By staying at home and being sensible. Not all of the people, obviously there's a lot of idiots out there, but most people, like yourself, yeah, let's be honest, you know. But the people who have taken it seriously, do you think they've been more influential than the people at the top, the scientists, you know?
I am very open-minded, so I like to kind of have a varied audience on like audio our audience exchange. I try to listen to those with authority and with credibility, but I also listen to just everyone else and kind of I just kind of sit on the side and observe actually. So I think that I was influenced by both the people and
Good for you.
those who are behind
Good for you.
the credible stuff.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Good for you. And Enough virus talk. We have to do it because we just got to see. It's interesting to see everybody from around the world that I'm privileged to speak to, how they're treating it, how they perceive it and everything. But as I said in the introduction to this in the podcast and the YouTube listening, it's quite interesting how I came across you because I have been slightly addicted to Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Stay off Twitter, you know, and I was on there and I saw your picture pop up with the title. Yeah. And, you know, let's full disclosure, we'd never met, never known who you are. You probably no idea who I was as well. And I just saw the title, 1.5 years sober. And I thought, wow. And I congratulated you straight away. I said, well done. Congratulations. And then we started talking and I thought, you know what? I think you need to share your story with the world because somebody somewhere is out there listening to this right now and they're struggling. And I've obviously done on gambling addiction, one on drug addiction, but alcohol and, you know, alcoholism as well is a big problem. And I'd like you to, if you'd be so kind, tell me your story and your journey and how you addicted to drinking alcohol.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the first thing that I can say was I definitely denied the fact that I would have an addiction, and I denied the thought that I could be addicted to something that I was just overindulging with. But that's kind of the whole theme here, is that you don't know you're addicted to something until you stop using it and go through a withdrawal feeling. So with alcohol, for me, I don't really even remember the first time I drank alcohol, but I had to have been probably 15. And underage drinking was huge where I'm from. Nashville specifically has more bars and alcoholic overindulgence venues than I can even count. So for me, I, you know, 1.5 years ago, I actually decided to take the step to completely cut out alcohol out of my life. And I think it was more of a decision to just test the waters and say, you know what, I need to stop. I need to get really clear. I need to refocus on the more important things in my life and begin that journey of, you know, one less thing to put my time and energy into, and maybe hopefully I can replace it with something better. And I did.
Yeah. So how old were you when you started drinking?
I don't even recall the first time I started drinking, which, you know, goes to show me when it even started. I had to have been 15 years old though, because I do remember distinct memories of being 15 and hanging out with my friends, and underage drinking, and my mom, I think I was texting my mom, and she just knew that my texting language was off, like whatever I was saying, it was off. And I remember her trying to call me, and I ignored her call because I didn't want her to find out I was drinking. And that continued on until, you know, I was 21 going on 22. So that was, you know, that's over half a decade of overindulgence in drinking and illegal drinking at that. You have the legal age of drinking here is 21. So by the time I was even legal to drink, I was done with it. So
You're incredibly young. You're 23, are you? Or 23?
23. I will be 24 this month, or in June.
Okay. So Right, so really young age, drinking, illegally drinking, but then again, that doesn't really matter because
Right.
people are, you know, an addiction is addiction. It can hit you early in life, later in life. It doesn't matter when it happens. Pressured into it, or did you just think, hey, this is cool? Like, you know, I want to see my friends, I want to be around my buddies and everything. Like, let's just start drinking.
Yeah, I think the party influence at that age was just something around here that really, really, really influenced me. People seemed they painted this beautiful picture that it was so fun to be drunk and spend my time drinking. Something that I noticed when I was kind of navigating counseling and going through, just like anxiety management after I stopped drinking, I realized that at 15, I did not have a single peer or a single authority figure in my life that showed me what being sober would be like. So everyone around me drank, and it just felt normal. It felt normalized. In fact, it was almost romanticized, I would say, of overindulgence with drinking.
Was there a boyfriend or a partner that you had that you used to do it with, or was it just a group of friends?
Yeah, I definitely had. Actually, it was my very first boyfriend officially at 15. He was 18, and he was also very into drinking. And he had all that's an I think he had all, a lot of older friends. That was probably a big influence on me as well. So while I was 15, I was actually hanging out with 21 and up people, which now that I'm looking back at it, it's very strange that adults, or they say like you turn into an adult at 21. Who really knows if that's true?
I hope not.
A lot of these people I was surrounded by were of a like of legal age, and they were completely influencing me, and I was just along for the ride and was like, well, I'm just hanging out, and this seems fun, this seems normal. They're not saying anything to me, they're not discluding me from their activities, so yeah, I can drink and observe. So
I can't help but draw comparisons to Erin, who actually drank alcohol as well, but it was more drug addiction that was her problem. She was clean until she went to college with her boyfriend from high school, who was smoking weed, and she was dead against it. She was dead against it, and but you know she loved him, and you know she didn't want to feel left out, and that's what started it. You know, so like it's a similar sort of thing. Like you know you had these friends, and then the boyfriend, and then the older people. When you know when you're younger, it's intimidating because you think to yourself, well, I want to fit in. I want to be, you know, at
absolutely.
home. Yeah, am I right? If I'm saying anything wrong, correct me, but that's how I used to see it. Like, I don't want to be a loser. Like, you know, I'm 15, 16, you know, I'm done hanging out with mum and dad or playing you know, on my PlayStation or whatever, or watching TV. I want to be with the cool kids. I want to be like, what are they doing? Well, they're going to this place and we're going to drink a bottle of vodka. I'm like, hey, that sounds dope. You know, let's go down there. Let's go check it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you ever been high? No. Oh, well, guess what? Craig has got a couple of zoots and we're going to. Yeah, that sounds pretty damn good, man. Like, are you telling me like all my problems and stuff are gonna go away because all I have to do is drink and smoke? Yeah, man. Well, have you even taken these things? What are these things? Oh, it's ecstasy, dude. Like, this is gonna make you see cool things.
Yeah.
But, do you know what I mean? Like, am I wrong? Is that how it goes? Or like, you know, that's how I used to see it when I was a kid.
Absolutely. No, that's exactly how it goes. I think, I think I actually got more peer pressure to smoke cigarettes at 14, than the necessary startup of drinking. But I will say this, when I did start drinking, and I was then noticing the change of my social life, and I started going to a lot of parties and house parties. And the more I would attend those, the more I would almost self-identify with who I was when I was drunk compared to when I was sober. And it became this addiction of my brain, in my brain, that, I was who I really was when I was drunk and in a room of people that were engaging with me while I was drunk. And I think that was probably what really made the addiction set in, was I became a person, whether that was who I was deep down inside or not. I became a person, and I had a I had a sense of self-identity when I was drunk, and I liked it. I liked the outgoing, the charismatic, the entertainer person that I was when I was drinking. I would go somewhere, walk into a room, and people would yell my name, and it was like, ah, this feels so comforting. This feeling, this excitement that people are so excited to see me and enjoy my presence. They want me there. I want to be there. It just felt very mutual, but I don't think that, they wanted me there because of who I was. It was because what could I give them while I was under the influence, so to speak.
Very, very sad. Very, very sad state of affairs. We don't see it. Listen, you're really young. You're really young. I mean, like, I'm exactly 10 years older than you. So, like, I know, I know. And you kind of had a different deck. Social media is way more normal for you, and, like, all of this stuff. And, like, people are a lot more introverted because they can these sort of things. But that's the sad thing, because, like, I actually had another addiction to I was always going to, like, hookah places, shisha places, to hang out with people. And yeah, I mean, listen, fun once in a while, not all the bloody time, not when you're going by yourself as well. It's addictive. There's nicotine in the stuff you're smoking. It's addictive. And I was going way too much and spending way too much money. Friends who were as bad, if not as worse than me. And they were some of the coolest, nicest people I've ever met. But we had one thing in common. We were addicted to going to that place. We're addicted. And this was a dingy little place. This was just a canopy in the middle of nowhere. Like, you know what I mean? Like, snow, we would go, because, like, hey, we're going tonight. Yeah. And it didn't matter what evening it was, it didn't matter what time. Like, some of my buddies were doctors, hedge fund managers, CEOs, like, really high-end guys, but and girls, but they were all addicted. They were all addicted. And I look around these people and I thought, wow, you're champions of your industries. And, like, they're married, they had kids, some of them, like, different age groups. But at the same time, we're all bloody addicted to this thing, and we're all here. Yes, because we get along. But probably more so because we were addicted to going to this place. So then, what I suggested to all of them, drifted apart, but what I suggested to them is that, hey, let's meet for dinner. And they were like, yeah, cool, we'll go for dinner, and then we'll go. And I said, no, no cafe, just dinner, other side of town, meet me here. To do exactly what we do at this place, but just at the cafe, restaurant instead. Nobody showed up because,
Oh,
yeah,
no.
because where did they go instead? They went to the place. And it's nothing personal. It's just because that's what they wanted to do. And then, as I pulled away from these, that entire friendship group just fell apart. People went their separate ways. The place is now shut down. And nobody. Sporadically, people might be in contact with other people and stuff, and they might be, oh, hey, how you doing, and everything like that. And I've stayed in touch with a couple of people, but I just realized, oh God, like, it's like when you look at a drunk and you're like, oh my God, like, is that me? Am I like these people? Did you ever have that feeling as well? Did you think, like, Jesus, I'm not a drunk. I'm Gabby. I'm Gabby White. I'm not a. How did this happen?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it kind of was more just about when, it was interesting because I was actually a very calculated drunk. And I think that has a lot to do with just who I am as a person. I'm very calculated with my actions. I'm
You're
extreme.
dangerous. You're dangerous. You're a dangerous addict. Oh, God.
I'm extremely intentional. And so I was a dangerous addict. And so when I started watching people get drunk and then not do anything with that, I was like, well, this blows. Like, where are the cool drunks at? So it was like I almost wanted to like evolve into like, what can I do while I'm drunk? Who can I hang out with? And I think that was I there was like a chase at one point where I would drink a lot or go to a party, and then at some point somehow I would go to 3 to 4 parties in one night because I was like, well, what all can I do? And what's more exciting? What's going on? And that's very common. A lot of people bar hop or party hop. And again, I was too young to bar hop because my heaviest drinking days were before I was even of legal age. God forgive me for doing all of that. But there were definitely times. I think when I saw the actions of my family members were really, really, really what struck me. So maybe my mother and my aunt, two amazing, incredible, beautiful women, would get drunk and just not handle their alcohol, while I was always able to handle my alcohol, with the exclusion of an event or two here and there. Of course, I would get extremely drunk and black out. When I started watching the strong women that I really love and look up to, when they started showing a really, really scary side to their drinking addictions or their drinking habits, that when I started thinking, oh God, if I don't contain this beast, I am going to end up like that. That's in my DNA. There's no fighting that. This will be who I become. So I think that really influenced me with at least taming it and kind of showing an interest to maybe managing drinking. I wasn't even thinking about sobriety until I did it.
Well, you've jumped the gun there because I want to really talk to you about how you got there. But let's talk about, if you don't mind, what you were doing. So, how much were you drinking, and what were you drinking?
I drank everything under the sun. I drank beer a lot. I used to love IPAs, which I think is something that not a lot of people like. But I like the very like earthy, hoppy beers. I drank really gross beer, low-end beer. I drank vodka, I drank tequila, I drank rum. I think I drank this imported Caribbean rum like at a high school event, like either in the bathroom or under the bleachers at one point, and I was like, this is crazy. This is very expensive that this other kid at the school had snuck in. And I was like, wow, I feel classy for drinking a more high expense alcohol, even regardless of what I was doing with it. I was like, oh, this is great. I'm of high esteem because I'm drinking higher alcohol than the other kids in my age group. I drink everything liquor wise and beer wise. And I think at one point when I would go to these parties, I would actually start making my own mixed drinks to try to see what I would like. And then I became more of I felt like a bartender at some events because I would make mixed drinks for other people because I was again, very calculated with my drinking. So if I was going to drink something, I didn't want it to taste awful. So I would start making my own mixed drinks and then serving them to the other kids and party attendees. And there was never a time where I was like, I shouldn't drink this or shouldn't drink that. It just was whatever I could get my hands on at that rate.
How much are we talking about, like every day?
There were months where it was every day. I mostly want to say I socially drank, but there were times where it got to a point where I was drinking alone. And after I turned 21, I would always have a drink whenever I'd go out with someone. Doesn't matter who I was going out with, if it was a family member or a friend. The minute I turned 21, I opened up this door to, well, while I'm eating or anywhere at any time, I can have a drink legally. So I'm going to use that advantage now because I like drinking. And it just became such a habitual thing. And that it really sneaks up on you in that way. It really can creep into your life when it's enabled and convenient at that rate.
And what's the most you ever drank in a day or a night?
The most, gosh, I feel, and if, I don't even remember if I could count an amount. I do remember, I think it was a spring break event. I'm not even sure, but I was in my teens, and it was when everyone was off of school for whatever holiday we were celebrating. And there were 3 days where I just nonstop drank. And I was very motherly, so I actually would make sure me and my friends were drinking water and eating snacks in between drinking to help replenish us. And I think I did that almost to make sure that I could keep drinking, which is like a vicious cycle.
And if you had to pick one specific moment, which was like your worst ever, like with your drinking, because obviously with gambling with me, like I had an evening or day actually where I just it was, you know, I didn't even set out to do it, and I spent the entire day in the casino, ruined my evening, ruined my weekend, couldn't go out, couldn't do anything, lost a lot of money, came home, was depressed, didn't get out of bed for about 2 days. I sort of like, you've got a problem, you know? That was the moment I said, oh my God, I've got to. Did you ever have a moment like that or several moments?
Actually, so I had two very distinct moments.
Tell me all about them. All
Okay.
about them. Yeah.
Well, one of them, I was with a small group of friends, small knitted group. We were just drinking at a bonfire, and I got way way overindulged in drinking. And I was at least 17. When I was 17, I adopted my dog, and she's just been the best thing ever for me and my support team. But when I was 17, I was drinking, and I was drunk driving. We decided to go from this one bonfire to someone's house. And I was very protective of myself and very aware, if not paranoid, of my surroundings at all times because I knew that I was vulnerable when I was drinking. I was aware of it. So I never let anyone drive me. I always wanted to be the one to drive myself. And this one evening, we were only going 10 minutes up the road. So I convinced myself that 10 minutes wasn't going to be bad. And when I got in my car, I realized Oh, this is such a horrible idea. But if I call them up right now and tell them that I'm way too drunk to drive, it's going to cause a scene. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to ruin anyone else's time. I just want to, suffer in silence, so to speak. And we drove down this back road, and I recall being probably a time where I was the most drunk. I was driving and I was swerving in the road, and it felt like my hands held no weight to them, and I could not hold on to the steering wheel no matter how hard I was gripping the steering wheel. And I was swerving in the road, and I was like, wow, I'm so drunk that like if I were to hit someone, I wouldn't even care. Like I would not even be able to do anything at this rate. Like it's already too far. I'm already too far gone into this. So what does it matter? And that's an extremely scary place to be. So thankfully I made it safely. No one was injured, no wrecks, nothing terrible happened. But that day or that following morning when I fell asleep and woke back up sober, I went home and I opened the door and greeted my dog. And I just looked at this dog of mine that was so excited to see me home. And I just thought, if anything would have happened to me while I was driving, I would not be able to come home to this. And that was one of the biggest turning points of my drinking behaviors, where I was like, okay, I can no longer indulge to that degree. Maybe I should stop. And then I still didn't stop afterwards, but I never drank and drove after that, because I thought, wow, who's going to take care of my dog if I'm gone? No one can take care of her better than I can. So in a way, I can actually thank her for influencing that to that degree.
What breed is your dog?
She is just a good old-fashioned mutt that I fostered for a month and then adopted as a puppy.
Oh, beautiful,
Yeah.
beautiful. And what was the second? Thank God you did survive, obviously. What was the second story
Yeah.
that happened?
So the second story is actually the last moment that I recall drinking ever. I was with my partner at the time, and we went out and celebrated with some friends, and I was sober enough to get home, because at that age, I think I was early tw like well, I guess I'm still in my early 20s, but I was 22 or 23, and we got into an argument that night, and the argument just escalated to where some really nasty words were said and exchanged. And I was sober, or more so, I was pretty sober. He was not. And I realized that I was actually just causing myself nothing but harm by being in this environment where people are drinking and can then, behave erratically or behave with their own mixed bag of behaviors towards me while they're under the influence. And I think that was the biggest catalyst for me to say, okay, you know what? I deserve better. I'm worth more. I have to be. I surely I'm worth more than this. I don't know how I got in this situation, but I definitely need to get out of it as soon as possible. And at that point, I was like, oh, I bet it's the drinking. I bet that if I just left this life behind and left the drinking behind, I will never have to experience what I'm experiencing right now in this moment, which was a really heated argument. And I don't know if I was just emotionally vulnerable at the time. I don't know what clicked in my head and what, I can't really recall the exact puzzle pieces, but something clicked to say, okay, Gabby, you hold an invaluable, so to speak, worth to yourself. Why are you doing this? You can do something else. You don't have to suffer. You don't have to be experiencing this right now. And so that was really where I was like, okay, you know what? It's probably time to just stop this and leave it behind and try to just never be here again.
Very powerful, very powerful, because everybody's different, everybody has different experiences, but ultimately all addicts are the same in the sense of they have a problem, and they're addicted. They feel that they can't function their lives without without a substance, and it's a very, very dangerous and thing to comprehend, especially for people who don't have addictions and who've never had addictions. But this is the key question now that talk has led to. You had those two significant moments. There's somebody that's listening to this, maybe crying or begging. What's the answer? What's the secret? And obviously, everyone's different, but how did you become sober?
The best thing I can tell people is that I don't care about your background or what your inner beliefs, but I will say this: you are valuable. You are worthy. You're worthy of a very, very beautiful, abundant, exciting, positive, healthy life. What that determines what you need to have in your life is up to you, but I can say without a doubt that I firmly believe you are valuable, you are worthy, and you can have a very wonderful, beautiful life. And in my experience, it was without substance use. And I think that, everyone could benefit if they gave themselves a break from substance use. Regardless of the time limit on that, that's up to everyone's personal judgment. But yeah, that just you're worthy of bigger, better, broader things. And if you're thinking about, if sobriety will help you, I personally believe that it will. I personally believe that there are things that you may not even be aware of behind these doors that you will unlock and open if you just jump the gun and say, okay, I'm gonna be sober and I need to be sober to help benefit myself. And don't be afraid of being alone in it because there is a million and one other people out there that are doing the same thing as you are, and we're all here to hold each other up through this journey.
How did you do it, Gabby? Tell us your secret.
Again, I think my dog helped me through it a lot. I really just kind of honestly just looking up outside, looking up in the sky, I envision just what happiness would feel like, what joy, what peace feels like. And I take a deep breath and I realize that I'm so lucky and humbled to be able to breathe fresh air and feel the wind and live and be alive. And that's what keeps me going. That's what does not ever stop.
What was the first couple of weeks like when you were sober? Like, were they hard? Did you get temptations? Talk me through that.
Actually, I think the first few weeks were very, very, very easy for me because it was a big mental shift. I was extremely determined, and when I'm personally determined to do something, I do it without a doubt. And they were easy. The hardest part was actually, as time goes on, I will have these glimpses of, I've learned a lot. I've been sober for a while. What's a drink gonna cost me? And I think that's the hardest part for me because, if you're so far, if you put so much space between you and your, I guess, trauma, so to speak, as you heal, you kind of can forget the pain or forget the negative influence it has on you to some degree. And every now and then I'm like, oh, I could drink a glass of wine and be like everybody else. And that's the thing, is you have to really return to who you are and remember, well, I'm not like everybody else. I'm my own individual person. And that just was not for me. It never suited me. It does not bring positivity to my life. And I have my days where I think I've done enough work here. I can drink again. And then I remember all the progress I've made, and I'm like, oh no. We're not gonna do that. We're not starting to drink again.
Not
So.
going, we're not going down that road. Yeah, not gonna
Right.
go.
Don't
Yeah.
even think about it.
So that's 1.5 years completely clean, sober, not a drop, right?
Correct. Not a single drop.
And no desire to ever drink again, or is that mentioning that at all?
I go back and forth on this a lot. A part of me says, no, never again. I love my beautiful life I've created being sober. And another part of me says, maybe when I turn 30, just maybe, because I've always wanted to make it to 30. Maybe if I turn 30, if I'm on the Amalfi Coast in Italy or something, somewhere that I really want to go, if some beautiful family handcrafted a wine that they wanted to gift me and it was intentional, then maybe, possibly, I might drink a glass, but it would have to be extremely, extremely intentional, and extremely purposeful. But even then, just the thought of it would be, wow, I've worked so long and I've gone so long without it. Will I even dismantle that at this rate? So, I think that I can romanticize the idea, but I don't think I'll ever actually do it.
And when you wake up and you live your life, come across your mind at all, or are you just officially completely done?
I'm so sorry, you cut out. Can you repeat that one more
No,
time?
probably, no problem. When you wake up, you live your life, you go to work, in normal circumstances, you're with your son, you're playing with your dog, whatever. Naturally, we all thoughts all the time. Alcohol, does it come into your brain at all, or are you just completely done with it?
It does not really come into my brain anymore. But I think that's because of my personal circumstance and my experience. Because everything that I'm working towards right now in this moment, the benefit of that completely outweighs any possible slight benefit alcohol could bring to me. And I think I've actually got it very easy because of that. And I know that it may not be as easy for others to fight that, addiction there. But for me personally, I wake up and just am extremely humbled that I have another chance and another day, right off the bat. So it's pretty easy for me to just keep going the way I'm going.
By the sounds of it, you were just fed up with it by the end of it,
Yeah,
you know?
yeah. I think I was just fed up with how I realized people were treating me while they were under the influence. And I was like, well, I know I don't act like this, but why do other people act like this? And I just was like, I've got to get out of here. I've got to get out of this room, this place where, this community where people drink.
So how are you now, like, again, when normal life does resume, how are you when you are around people and they're drinking, they're getting drunk, whatever, like, what is your Like, are you totally cool with it? Like, yeah, I've got a lemonade, I've got a coffee, I'm all good. Or like, does it trigger anything, or you just like, yeah, I'm good with this. You can be around people that drink.
I think it varies. If I'm around a group of strangers and they're drinking, sometimes I can feel an onset emotional trigger and I have to excuse myself and leave. I will say this, since I've become sober, it's become almost daunting with how lonely it can be because you don't surround yourself with people who overindulge. If you're trying to be better and do better, you just don't surround yourself with the things that you're trying to avoid and not do. And so that's a lot of people, especially in my town. A lot of people drink recreationally, even if they're not overindulging, even if they're just having a glass. I tend to just not even surround myself with the stuff. I don't give myself the opportunity to be in scenarios where there's a lot of heavy drinking. I think if I were to go to an event for work, then that would be different because I would again have an intention of why I'm there. But I just don't even give myself that opportunity to be around a lot of people who drink so that way I can be uncomfortable. When my family or my friends are having a glass or drinking their cocktail or whatever, I don't mind. I actually have a lot of friends who are bartenders, so I don't really mind it. There's definitely a craft behind alcohol. There is an artistic craft behind bartending that I extremely enjoy the science to it, but. Yeah, it doesn't bother me. It just depends. It just completely depends. But I can totally be around it, I think.
Good for you. Good for you. When I said you were a dangerous addict, I refer to myself and I refer to Aaron, who was the interview about drug addiction, where he's smart, where you will find a way, like, oh, you're 17 or you're 15, you're not allowed to drink. You can't. No, you're gonna do it. There's gonna be a way. You're gonna, because under the bleachers that you said, someone's sneaking it in. No, I'm getting this done. I'm Gabby White. Like, I can do whatever. Aaron, whatever, we can do whatever we want. I'm getting this, regardless of what anybody says or whatever it does. I'm doing it, and you know what? It's exciting. It's forbidden. It's forbidden. I shouldn't be drunk in a library. I shouldn't be stoned at work. I shouldn't be away from my desk and going to whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's all of those things. And talk about fate. I got a phone call this morning. Year and 2 months now from gambling, and I got a call this morning. No joke, no joke. Got a call, and I was like, "Hello, this is blah blah blah. I'm calling you from this online casino. Just, I'm. I swear to you. I swear to you. I swear to you. I swear to you. 26th of May. Just letting you know, we have a welcome package for you. We've got all of these things and stuff." And I just said to him, "Dude, I'm not interested, man." And he goes, "Are you sure?" We got. I said, "Dude, please never call me again. I'm not interested. I'm blocking this number." It was like a mobile number on behalf of a UK online casino, and I just blocked it. And I just thought to myself, as you were talking there, I just thought to myself, "Wow, like, I did it. Like, oh yeah, that's great. Yeah, I'll take that. I did. Yeah." So we've both come such a long way, and it's testament to a. Not just willpower, but education, knowing that you in particular were somebody that associated good times with drinking and then bad times with drinking. And that's like any vice, any toxic addiction that anybody has. But I'm coming towards the end of things now. And bless your heart for your sobriety. My advice to you don't have to take it. I would personally 30 because you've come so far, but you've got 6 years, so take your time. A lot can change, and that hopefully things can. Hopefully people have also listened to this and they have resonated with your incredible knowledge. But if you had to pick one thing, Gabby White, amongst everything that you've learned, everything you've experienced, the pain, the suffering, and the resilience, and the, like the freedom, all of it, there's, you give somebody out there that just can't see a light at the end of the tunnel, what would it be?
I'd probably have to say that, you are not alone, regardless of how hard you convince yourself that you are on your own through your struggles. There is another person out there that does care, that is influenced, that absolutely needs and wants to hear your experiences, just like I was in need of someone else. I just became the person I needed. I was looking for a love or looking for someone who cared enough for me to help support me, and finally I had enough to where I had to be that person for myself. And I just would say that if you are looking for that person or that one thing to help you, know that it is and can be within yourself, and it's so beautiful on the other end of the tunnel. It's so just even revolutionary of how you're gonna feel when you get there. And I believe in you. And I'm here to support you, and to some degree, I'm here. I'm there with you energetically.
Hey, podcaster, you made it right to the end of the show. That's quite commendable. Well done. What did you think? Did you like it? Did you hate it? All feedback is much appreciated by me, so please get in touch with me, even if you fancy being a guest on my show. Head over to scgshow.com or contact me through my YouTube channel, as I respond to almost everybody who gets in touch. Have a great day. Stay safe. Keep podcasting.